You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
This is episode 61 of our podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Ogres, ogres, ogres!
And Jay.
Hello.
No ogre chant from Jay. And returning for his second showing on this podcast, it's the ogre himself, it's Andy.
Ogres, ogres, ogres.
How are we all?
All right, yeah, a bit cold, isn't it?
It is a bit cold, it's a bit wet. Christmas is truly on the way.
It is, yeah.
I know it's not December yet, so it still feels foreign to me that we should be talking about Christmas.
6 weeks yesterday, Christmas Day?
Yeah.
41 days.
Like amazing.
Importantly,
jingle bell music in the background.
Importantly, only one payday between now and Christmas.
Slightly terrifying.
That's how I judge these things. So on today's podcast, if you hadn't guessed by the chanting to open us up, we're going to be talking about the Ogre Moor Tribes Battle Tome, which came out a couple of weeks ago. I see there's a copy out in front of us. In fact, there's two copies out, because I think you've got a digital copy there, haven't you?
I do indeed.
Do you prefer your books digital?
Normally, no. I prefer having a physical copy.
Okay.
But when the book came out, it was at Blood and Glory, and I, like a fool, I'd ordered it home.
You're impatient.
So, I'm impatient.
Fair enough. No, I was just intrigued, because I just prefer having a book, physical book.
Yeah.
It's always better. Cool. So we're going to be talking about the Ogre Moor Tribes. We've got quite a bit of news to get through, including some bizarre postings on Facebook today.
Yeah, we have.
Which we'll talk about in a bit, and goodness knows what that's about. Luckily, we've only got till tomorrow to find out. What else we've got on this podcast? We've got our top three ideas for future battle boxes from any of the Warhammer systems. They can include brand new made-up models. They can be any faction-orientated armies that don't exist yet.
Yeah, basically what you'd like to see in your dream battle boxes.
You guys haven't let us down. We've got quite a few choices on social media, which we'll also read out. Before we get into all of that, though, let's talk about what we've been doing in the hobby this week. So, Matt, do you want to start us off?
Well, I was playing some Warhammer with Dave, so I had to finish a unit of Ogre Gluttons. They were just slapped out with contrast. Quick and dirty job on them, but they matched my old ogres that I painted years and years and years
ago. You couldn't tell the difference between the ones that you'd painted ages ago and new ones.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with that. And I started on some lead belchers because I think in my proper list, we'll probably talk about it later, gonna take a load of lead belchers.
Oh yeah.
Because they're ace.
Cool.
And and then I finished an Invicta war suit. That's good to go. 9 eliminators with a variety of different weapons for sniping out tanks and sniping out heroes. And started 5 Hellblasters and 3 suppressors. I said last week I really need to get these Space Marines sorted. Well, now we're on that.
Cool, that's good. So it's on, ready for the Unicorns event in only a week on Sunday.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'll be able to take the Space Marines to that because I might be lacking in bodies, but I'll certainly try to.
Okay, cool. So you're not locked in with which army you're going
to
take?
Not locked in yet. I mean, I might just take the Death Corps Kree because I've pretty much got exactly...
I could be wrong, Andy, but I think we're allowed to just literally rock up on the day with our army list, aren't we?
Yeah.
The one that we have to submit early. That's okay, then. So you can literally go until the
Dave,
Saturday evening.
You're bringing a free army list. Have a look on everyone's table, choosing one.
Yeah, I'll just bring a load of army back in Matt's car and just pick one. Miles and miles go next. This is one thing that's getting me at the moment. I'm struggling to concentrate on a 40k army, and I don't know why. At the moment, I'm toying with a list of Death Guard to take to the Unicorns, but I'm not going to say that I'm locked in on that idea, because I'm really not sure. I don't know. Because I enjoyed using my AdMech last time. I've got my Tyranids that are ready to go.
But Tyranids would be good.
I just can't seem to lock myself into a 40k army.
Inquisition.
Well, I haven't really got... Yeah, see, I could put an Inquisitor in with my AdMech. I don't know. I haven't decided.
Which army have you not used in a long time?
Tyranids?
Tyranids, Death Guard.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Roll the dice.
Right, yeah, should just leave it to the dice guards. I kind of like to make a decision soon because I'm thinking if I go Death Guard, then I've got a few models I might just finish off and then everything's painted then, including the tank.
You know what? I'm just going to jump in. I've nearly got 1250 of Gene Steeler Court.
Yeah?
For a bit of filth.
That'd be cool. One army that I'm definitely all over at the moment, which I'm full on painting, is my bone splitters for my big war. So I've been painting more of my Savage Oryks. I painted my Wurzog Prophet. He's done. Really happy with him.
Yeah.
As soon as these Savage Oryks have done, I've just got an endless spell to paint, and that's them good to go.
Awesome. They had a bit of a field test the other day, didn't they?
Well, I've had a couple of games with them now. Two games with this list so far.
You say games, Matt calls them massacres.
They weren't massacres. They weren't massacres. That last game, the game we had this week that you touched upon earlier, Matt, it was my big war versus your ogres with the new books. It was your first time with the new book. I made one horrendous error, absolutely horrendous error, which I thought ended the game for me, because I just basically buffed all my hard boys, sent them in, and then didn't fight with them, and they just got battered by ogres.
And this was, I had two big blocks of 12 ogres that were barreling up the table, and one of the units was, they went in optimal position, and you pretty much charged a unit to get the entire kind of squad in combat, and then didn't attack with them first.
No, for some reason, some part of my brain was like, well, your savage orcs are going to die this turn. So why don't you get some attacks in with them, and the hard boys will be okay. They'll be all right, and they weren't all right.
They
took them all off. they got battered. But I did manage to pull it back in the end.
You did, yeah.
Mainly thanks to my Maw Crusher.
Yeah, Maw Crusher.
He was brutal, absolutely brutal. And it's good, like getting him through other units, building up his amount of attacks and wounds, and then
I threw away a butcher into him, which was silly. And yeah, I mean, maybe I should have focused on him, but the ogres had a great time ripping through the rest of your army.
Yeah, they did. Well, I mean, on both sides, there was very, very little left. I think I had the Maw Crusher and a Shaman, and you had one unit of six ogres left. I think they were down to six.
Tyrant was dead. Firebelly, I think, was alive, but yeah, not a lot left.
No, Firebelly died as well.
Okay.
Maw Crusher killed him. So
proper destruction armies then.
Yeah. But it was a really fun game, and I am absolutely loving the Big War at the moment. Cool. Considering that I was all on Iron Jaws and didn't think I'd be into the Big War, I don't think I'll ever go back to Iron Jaws. But anyway, so that was really good. So yeah, that's what I've been painting. I'm hoping to get them finished next week, ready to buy my second box of Savage Orcs, ready for Warhammer TV.
Yeah.
Before the end of the year. Andy, what have you been painting this week?
Just under 2 weeks ago into Blood & Glory, into the Warhammer Achievements. And bizarrely enough, I took my ogres to that. So earlier in the year, I'd done all the now gluttons and all the Iron Guts, all the basic battle line stuff with some heroes. So I wanted to spice things up and take some big monsters. So I bought a Beast Claw Raider Start Collecting Box, built with Thunder Tusk up as a Thunder Tusk Beast Rider, painted that with Contrast, which was my first. I've done like Underworld Warbands and stuff with Contrast, but not big monsters. And once I'd gone through it, it just made it so much easier. I then did an Ale Guzzler Gargant, aka a giant, which was really fun. And then I've got four Mournfang that I've built, but I haven't painted yet. And that was before Blood & Glory. So in the last 2 weeks, I've had a bit of time off work. So I've been painting up Fire Slayers.
Ooh.
So impressed by the Thunder Tusk with the contrast paints. I've been going for like a Grey Third Lodge.
Okay.
Which are basically, they have like black plumes, black beards, golden helmets, and like red loincloths. And I think I've painted 10 Uruk Hearthguard, 10 Hearthguard Berserkers, 20 Volkites, and I'm just about to finish off a Rune Smiter.
That's pretty impressive. Wow.
That is impressive.
With Contrast.
With Contrast, pure Contrast. And then the Man, the Myth, the Legend, I painted up Gotrek as well with Contrast. And I'm 520 points done in the afternoon. So.
Brilliant.
So quite a lot, to be fair.
Well, I think Andy's beating me.
Yeah, he has. When I painted my Gotrek with Contrast, it made me want to go out and buy a Fire Slayer army, because it was so easy and quick.
You were never completely convinced on Fire Slayers, were you?
No, I wasn't, but I've liked what like your army when I've seen, because obviously I've fought your Fire Slayers multiple times.
Got battered by my army multiple times.
Be interesting to see how they do against Oryx, though.
Bring it on, let's do that.
Ooh. So cool. Yeah, so you've been very busy with the brush. Jay, how about yourself?
I have finished building Archeon. He's all completed now. This is the Archeon I found in my garage. So.
The Archeon with no instructions.
Archeon
just
with no
stress. This is pretty impressive.
Hardcore Chaos follower I am. I mean, if that isn't like devotion to the Chaos Guards, I don't know what is. And then, what else have I done? Oh, I've been painting Infinity. So I've not painted any 40k, although this week I think I'm going to have to get back onto the 40k for the tournament on the following Sunday. So I'll be doing my Eldar. But this week I've just been painting Infinity. So I've got some the new O12 faction. So I've painted up some of the light infantry, and the most recent model I painted up was some heavy infantry, the Gamma unit. Just a change. I sometimes quite like painting. These are all unique models, so you don't need to worry about units of them and armies of them. You can just sort of go to town on a single model, so it's quite refreshing to do that.
And there's some really nice sculpts, aren't there, as well, Infinity?
They are very nice sculpts, all metal models. So just a change of pace. Obviously, I got a lot going on with house moving and whatnot at the moment, so a lot of my stuff's packed away, but... this time next week, there should be at least 10 Eldar finished. So,
excellent. Good stuff. Well, that wraps up our opening segment of this podcast. We've got the top three and the Ogre deep dive into the Moor Tribes book coming up. But we'll take a pause now and come back with the news. Is there much news this week, Matt?
There's quite a bit of news this week. There's always news, Dave.
Shocking.
Yeah, I think the times of a quiet week from Games Workshop are over.
Maybe Christmas week, like the week of Christmas Day.
Oh, they normally have big reveals, don't they, though, on Christmas Day? You know, teasing what army's coming up next year.
Potentially.
Yeah, well, this week, we've got a load of pre-orders covering a couple of weeks' worth of releases, which is interesting. So, pre-orders out on the 23rd... first of all, for Underworld, we've got Ripper Snarlfangs.
This is the faction. This is the warband I've been looking forward to.
These are like the Goblin Wolf Riders, aren't they?
Yeah.
€25. I haven't got a pound price, but it's about what, £15, £17.50, something like that for Underworld's gang.
Yeah, something like that.
This is interesting because normally you associate Gits and Goblins with like a horde, swarmy, weak army, but there's only three models in this box, right? So these are an elite army, an elite Goblin army.
It's like one of the most elite Underworld factions in the Goblins.
Their mounts get to attack as well. So when you go into attack, the Goblin fight and the Wolf fights
that's
as well.
Cool.
So that's really cool.
So it's the Wolf Warband with some Goblins.
basically.
Some Goblin cheerleaders.
Apparently, from what I was reading on Warhammer Community today, though, the leader of the Warband is actually one of the best fighters in the game.
Is it?
So, there you go.
Are all the upgrades on the Wolf?
Yeah.
Not on the Goblin.
Any salesman will tell you that, Dave.
So, yeah.
Too much The Apprentice.
So these come out alongside some sleeves and dice, as per usual. We've also got an interesting box, Champions of Dreadfane. So this is a box with two warbands, one with Sequiturs and one with Banshees. These are from a US exclusive Underworld game that was released across the pond.
Called Dreadfane.
This just contains those warbands and unique card decks for both of them. Yeah. So the full self-contained Underworld factions that presumably are currently compatible with the current season of the game.
Yeah.
You get your Stormcast there, Dave.
Yeah, well, these are the same easy build kits, weren't they, that we had ages ago.
Yeah.
Still need some of those Banshees, actually.
There you go. So this is €45, so £35, maybe. So not too bad for two factions and all the cards, which is pretty good. They're going to have sleeves as well. We've also got the Beast Grave gift pack for €30. Comes with a dashboard to put all your cards and activation markers on. You get three plastic round tokens, and then you get 10 Gambit cards, 10 upgrade cards, and 10 objective cards. These are cards from Shadespire that are no longer kind of in use, or brought up to date with new artwork and stuff.
Cool.
So these are legal cards?
Legal cards, right. Yeah. Which is a cool little thing, isn't it?
I like the idea of a dashboard.
Yeah.
I've seen when we went to tournaments, some of the Warhammer, you see like scratch built sort of dashboard things, so it'd be nice to get.
They did sell some mats when
they're a bit big though.
Yeah,
I think it's gonna be a little card thing. I think it's for €30. What's that? £20, £25, maybe depending on how they price it.
30 odd cards with it. That's pretty. 30 good.
Cards plus your plastic activation tokens. Yeah, I think that's a cool thing.
I like it. Good stocking filler.
Yeah, definitely. From the Black Library, we have got the limited edition of The First War by Gav Thorpe, Book 3 of the Siege of Terror. Up for pre-order on Saturday. It's normally about £50 for these, but they are gorgeous leather-bound, gilt-edged books. They tend to sell out super, super quick, so get on the GW website.
And for those who have been following the podcast, you know that Matt's got no choice but to buy one of these.
That's it, I'm all in now.
You're committed.
I am. On the same day, we've got the paperback of The Solar War by John French.
Which I still haven't bought.
So you should buy that, Dave, and read it, because it's really good.
Yeah, I should.
But that's not all the pre-orders we've got. Bizarrely, we've got some pre-orders that are out on Black Friday, which, when we're recording this, is a week on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And they include the big daddy item this Christmas, the Adeptus Ceritas Sisters of Battle army set at £125.
Do you know, in the past 48 hours of all these new posts that have gone up, I've gone from not being interested in the Sister Battle to... Man, I wish I could pick up that box.
Well, just to tempt you, Dave, here's what you get in that box. £125 is a lot for a kind of essentially a Stark Collecting box. But you get 10 Battle Sisters, brand new plastic Battle Sisters, 5 Seraphim, 4 Sisters Repentia, a Repentia Superior with whips, 3 Arcoflagellants, a Penitent Engine, because I know you're a fan of them.
I like the Penitent Engine.
And a Canonist, which is exclusive to this box at the minute. Plus a limited edition codex, and this is the full codex that's not out until January, which is pretty cool. You get decks of cards covering objectives, stratagems, and sacred rites. You get 12 miracle dice. These are pure, holy white dice to use for your miracles. So in the Sisters of Battle, if you meet certain conditions, you get essentially the 40k equivalent of Destiny dice. So you get one at the start of each battle round, you roll it and add it to your pool of dice that you can use instead of making a roll. And then there's certain conditions like martyrdom, you lose a character, you get a dice. You resist the psychic power, you get a dice. I think that's quite a cool thing. And then some of the different kind of factions will change the way that you generate them, like the Order of the Martyred Rose, are they? The kind of black and red classic ones, they get one of them each phase if a unit dies. Because they're into, you know, martyrdom and stuff. So yeah, you get some dice to represent them.
When you said miracle dice, I saw Dave's eyes light up. I thought these could be dice you could use for your charge rolls, like guarantee the charge.
You can. So you be basically, you've got a pool of numbers, and then you can use those dice instead of making a roll.
Can you take miracle dice with any army? Like,
do you see now why, like... I'm tempted by the Sisters of Battle.
You need someone for your evocators, Dave.
Oh,
you'd misjudge it. You'd take miracle dice an inch short from making the charge.
Take them and drop them. Oh, no.
I thought I'd left all the bad charging behind me, but perfect example. My Maw Crusher had 2 chances to charge your leg belches and failed both times miserably. So it still just follows me around.
Yeah. So guaranteeing dice rolls is pretty cool, Dave.
I can just see Dave going into Games Workshop now talking to the sales rep. Can I have a pack of miracle dice and a Goblin War van with the best fighter in business? Certainly, sir. Here you go.
You also get the 40k core rules and a transfer sheet. So it's a lot of stuff for your money.
Yeah.
There's really, what, 25 miniatures in it? But I'd like to see this kind of thing for armies going forward. I mean, we did used to get it back in the day. You had an army box with the army book.
You used to get the limited edition standard bearers and things like that, didn't you?
Before the main release. So I wonder if this is kind of going back into that.
This is going to scratch that itch while you wait for January.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be able to get all those new models. Okay, you will be able to build a brilliant army until January because you need the tanks and extra things, but...
You've got the full booklet and write your army list.
Yeah, it's going to keep you going. I mean, I don't know if other people are the same, but when a new army's coming out, you spend ages drooling over all the little previews and things you can find. So to have an actual, some sprues and the rules in your hand while you wait for the main release is good.
Yeah, that's cool. There's some other stuff up for pre-order though that same day. We've got the new Chaos Sorcerer for £17.50. I know you're a fan of this, Dave.
It's a really nice model.
Didn't we see this early in the year?
Rumour Engine way, way, way before any of the Chaos releases.
Yeah.
Because we thought it was going to come out with the Chaos range.
Because am I right in thinking we saw the new Chaos models in like January or something this year, wasn't it? At that open New Year open day,
yeah, I think it may have been.
So it's around that time we saw. Yeah, wow.
So yeah, so that's pretty cool. Alongside this, we've got Start Collecting Vanguard and Start Collecting Chaos Space Marines for £60 each. This is the contents of Shadow Spear split, basically. Shadow Spear was a cool set with some really cool models. It's good that you can now get these and start collecting boxes.
Still the only place you can get the suppressors and the demon engines and obliterators.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's worth picking up. Psychic Awakening 2 Faith in Fury is up for pre-order as well at £25. Which is interesting. It's got rules for a whole host of Imperial and Chaos factions. And some of the lore, if you've watched the trailer, it seems like there's a change happening over humanity. So whether this psychic awakening is the majority of humanity becoming psychic, this whole series I'm getting an End Times vibe,
where this
is going to kick off a massively new edition of the game.
Well, in the Horus Heresy series of books, specifically Master of Mankind, the Emperor sort of foresees the evolution of mankind, and that's what his whole project was about, to protect mankind through that phase of evolution. Perhaps that phase is now upon us.
Yeah.
And the Emperor isn't there to protect us like he planned to be. What's going to happen? Oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah. So, I think I picked this up because there's also some cool upgrades and stuff for your marine characters, plus a load of chaos stuff in there. £25 and some extra lore in there is pretty good. And then we've had a couple of Forge World pre-orders as well. These are really cool. So Haleth and Aldor for the Rohan army. Haleth being the young kid who gets the sword from Aragorn. And Aldor being the old fella who accidentally fires his bow at the start of the Battle of Helm's Deep.
First blood.
He has a special rule.
Good shot. It was, yeah.
He has a special rule where he fires before anything else in the game, even if you use heroic abilities to fire. I think that's really cool. And he hits on like a 5+, but he gets to reroll because he's a lucky shot.
Yeah, don't you get it, the Urukai through the eye play or
something? He does, yeah. So this guy is going to have to get bought and put my army. They're £21 for the two of them, which isn't bad for a Forge World kit.
Good sword.
In other news, the Red Gobbo competition has started. So if you tweet Dared Gobbo with suggestions or reasons why you should win his competition, along with a link to your Games Workshop wishlist, he picks one each day to win an item up to the value of £125. So keep...
Isn't that like a Sisters of Battle box?
It is, yeah.
I was just going to say the same thing, yeah.
That's convenient, isn't it? So yeah, get tweeting Dared Gobbo, and I think they're going to be going for funny ones, because it's, you know, the Warhammer community team, and they probably just want a laugh over December. Mm. We recently had the Black Library Weekender, just this last weekend gone, where there's a few big announcements. Warhammer Horror made a bit of a stir this year. Next year they are... introducing a Warhammer crime series. So these are crime stories set in the grim darkness of the far future, which coincidentally is a bit like what we were saying, what we think we'll get with the 40k TV shows.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. You read like Inquisitor novels, and they're almost like a murder mystery, aren't they?
Yeah. So I think it's a really cool thing. The first book is in July 2020, and it's Bloodlines by Chris Raitt.
When do we get an Agatha Christie
model? You say this is set in the 40k?
They're all 40k at the minute.
40k
crime. Cool. And we'll look for that. More exciting than that, though, in February, we have got the Black Library Celebration 2020. This is an annual event. I think it's the third one now. The big news of it is we have got new models for Valerian and Alaya from Watchers of the Throne, so a custodian and the Sister of Silence, with some awesome models.
Yeah, these are really nice, especially the Sister of Silence model.
I hope she gets she's a HQ choice for Sister of Silence.
It's gotta be,
because they really need one.
Well, she is solid in the books.
I was also thinking, do you think we might see a Sisters of Silence release around that time as well, or at least a Talons of the Emperor?
Talons of the Emperor would be good, yeah.
So yeah,
I mean, there's enough Forge World models to do a Sisters of Silence army
there, is, yeah.
So they could do that.
So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming out on that day, though. Generally, it's a big celebration of Black Library, and there's loads of exclusives and limited editions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Warhammer World are going to have an exclusive book in for this, and it's a leather-bound limited edition of Horus Rising. So it matches the Siege of Terror box. Expensive, nice, pretty Horus Rising book.
Don't do it, Matt. There's nearly 60 books.
I know. Yeah. I'm tapping out with that. This is going to be a Warhammer World exclusive if you do want it. The first wall will be out in hardback then, so you've only got till February to wait for the hardback. And then we've got Lionel Johnson by David Geimer. Not his brother Boris. So, this is next in the Primark series. I know you're a fan of the Dark Angels.
I am a fan of the Dark Angels, and I probably prefer Lionel Johnson running this country rather than Boris. Others may disagree.
he got that heresy sorted, apparently. Then we've got Oath and Conquest, an AOS anthology of short stories, which is pretty cool. A new Cal Jericho book, Sinner's Bounty, 13th Legion by Gav Thorpe, which I think is about a penal legion, which is pretty awesome. And
the 13th Legion, they were the Ultramarines. Could be Ultramarines.
No, I think it's a penal legion guard regiment. We've got some limited edition custody dice coming out for it.
What?
Yep. And a Heresy pin badge collection, which I'll add to the pin badge collection on my wall.
I hope those custodian dice are also miracle dice.
Your last custodian dice weren't so lucky, were they?
No, they didn't activate the force shields.
So that's a lot of stuff coming out in February for the celebration. It tends to be a weekend that all that stuff's available. I think you got, was it Eisenhorn last year? We don't know if the custodian sister or resin or plastic. They might be plastic now because a lot of the recent ones have been.
Yeah, Ghost Show was plastic. So.
But don't quote me on that. They might be
Eisenhorn was fine cast.
Yeah. So we'll see. And then they announced that book for the Siege of Terror, Saturnine, by Dan Abnett. We don't know any details about it.
We were talking about it, weren't we? Whether it would be some sort of guard legion or guard force or...
I think basically it'll be what's happening on Terra while the siege is going on. Because we know Fulgrim basically gets bored and starts raping and pillaging. So he might tell those other stories. So yeah, and that is presumably, since they've announced it with this limited edition out around that time-ish, they're doing like 3 or 4 a year now, aren't they?
Yeah.
So yeah, could be. White Dwarf has just arrived through the letterbox for subscribers, and it has got an Inquisition list in it, Dave.
It does have an Inquisition list in it. Very, very similar to the Index.
Yeah, we did warn you that it's probably going to be this.
There is some cool stuff in there. I think the coolest thing in there is the way that you can include one in Imperium Army. So if you can take an Inquisition detachment, that's fine. But if you don't, then you can just include an Inquisitor, and he doesn't take up a HQ slot. So, and that doesn't interrupt all your like chapter tactics and things. So, because that's a new thing, isn't it? Where if you want to get all the Ultramarine special rules, everything in your army has to be Ultramarines. You can still take an Inquisitor, and he won't disrupt your rules.
They're very much an allied force rather than a whole force, then, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
You get a couple of stratagems. Are there any warlord traits in here for you?
Yeah, you get warlord traits, and you get relics.
So it does flesh out the index.
Yeah, there, there's a couple of cool relics.
Psychic discipline.
Your own psychic discipline, yeah. Telephasia.
Do you know, I was really worried that you were going to get rid of my favourite spell.
And it's just been renamed, hasn't it?
Dominate.
No, it's still called Dominate.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah. Where you pick an enemy character,
3d6,
beat its leadership, and then you get to use an attack or a shooting attack, close combat attack.
That's interesting. There's also a psychic power for each of the
Ordos, usual kind of rules. If you take one of the special characters, for example the pre-mentioned Eisenhorn, it locks you into a specific warlord trait.
Tempted you then, Dave? You building the warband?
Well, yeah, I do want to add it. I just don't know what... I don't know what Imperium Army to...
Deathwatch makes... Ordo Xenos Inquider, Eisenhorn leading some Deathwatch.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
The problem with Deathwatch
Corvus is...
Corvus Blackstars.
The problem with Deathwatch is... if you want a cool Deathwatch army, you've got to take the old school Marines. I just don't fancy painting a load of old school Marines.
I can understand what you're saying there, because I'm tempted to dust off the Blood Angels, but obviously Blood Angels are quite jump pack heavy. You can't really do a jump pack heavy list yet with the Primaris, so do you have to build them as old Marines? But the new Primaris Marines look so good. I understand what you're saying. The Death Watch Marines, though, they are a bigger scale. They're almost the
same. You know what?
Source.
You could kit bash them to give them the looks of the new models, but use the rules of the old ones.
You could, yeah. And I did think about getting some Mark IV jump packs and whacking them on the back of the Primaris Marines. Yeah. There's nothing stopping you just using Primaris Marines, like Matt says, as Death Watch models.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Eventually, the older models, I imagine, will get phased out, so you'll be left with Primaris Death Watch. But
yeah, because at the moment, the Death Watch Primaris just feel like the Primaris Marines just shoved together. Like this, I don't know. It just doesn't have the same. You know, the cool thing about the Death Watch is you've got all like the cool Death Watch shotguns, storm shields.
Yeah.
They can carry storm bolters. You've got the Black Watch.
That's just house rule, it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's we'll see.
Make your own rules.
Because
up.
Going into the new year, I'm thinking of starting a new Imperium army, mainly so I can get an Inquisitor in there. And at the moment, it's kind of going towards Guard.
Guard would be cool.
Mainly Scions. Yep. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, cool. Another little teaser at the back of White Dwarf is next issue of White Dwarf, which is out on the 20th of December. It mentions ghosts and flesh tearers.
So flesh tearers is quite...
Flesh tearers, but the ghosts is... I don't know. Nighthaunt rules, maybe?
Ghosts.
Or Gaunt's ghosts, maybe, ghosts. Yeah.
Flesh tearers is in the 40k chapter.
Flesh tearers is in the 40k chapter.
Okay.
So probably a White Dwarf.
Yeah, it'd be similar to, you know, a couple of stratagems, a couple of relics, just to make a flesh terror force, but still a cool thing if you like your Dawn of War.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. So yeah, we had a bit of news rumbling out from about Forge World's Thermir and Temurkin's Horde range.
Yeah, I was having a look on some forums, spreading the good joy of the podcast, and came across a post on TGA discussing that Temurkin's Horde and Thermir were being discontinued from Forge World. Now, I tried to find some kind of source for this. But apparently some people in America have received emails. I don't know if these are Forge World newsletters or...
Well, since we made the post, Thermir are now sold out on the UK Forge World site.
That's what I was going to say as well. In America, Temurkin's Horde and Thermir are gone from the Forge World American website. But they were still in stock at the time we were discussing it in the UK.
Thermir are interesting because they had some models, they had some rules. There were also some images of... models they were working on.
We saw them at an open day.
Yeah, of like the mages.
I think they were going to be the next full Sigmar range, but I don't think Sigmar's gone down terribly well in Forge World, and I can't remember who I heard it from, but I'm fairly certain that Vorgorath is the last Sigmar model we'll get from Forge World, which is a shame.
It is a shame, because when we saw Vorgorath complete for the first time, they'd set up a new part of Forge World, which was concentrating on Age of Sigmar, and they were really excited. You could write down ideas of stuff that you wanted them to look at. It just doesn't seem like it really took off. But there are changes afoot with Forge World.
Well, yeah, we heard rumblings that there's going to be some big news and structural changes, maybe. We don't know what this is. It might just be noise on the internet, but we touched on it a little bit last week where... the distinction between Games Workshop and Forge World is getting more and more blurred, isn't it? Where if you think Necromunda Dark Uprising is essentially a Forge World product, along with the Lord of the Rings stuff, it sits under the Specialist Games, which sits under Forge World, but their Games Workshop releases through the stores and the website, they're kind of slowly becoming one and the same.
Mm. So I think eventually we'll just see it all on gamesworkshop.com.
Potentially.
The Thermir... could also be brought, yeah, like, they could be, the actual sort of, like, background and whatnot for the Thermir, they would fit in well with the Realm of Beasts, that seems to be the focus at the moment.
Yeah.
And if Games Workshop can take that sort of idea and produce a range from it.
Well, let's not forget the main studio write all the 40k rules for the Forge World stuff now. And same with the AOS stuff, they, I asked, one of the open days was chatting to... Ben Johnson, and said they wouldn't have Forge World scrolls in a battle tome, but they write them alongside the book to make sure that all the synergies and buffs and stuff work on them. We saw the new Rogue Idol drop at the same time, so yeah.
Flippin'ecky's mint now.
He's really good.
I can't. I'm gonna have to get more one of them for the book. He's brilliant.
So yeah. So it is interesting what happens there, and I don't know if we find out soon, but hopefully, just to I suppose knock the rumor on the head. Over the last few days, we had a lot of Sisters reveals on the GW website as well, including some new models, reinvented characters. The Hospitalier is my favourite one. She's like kind of tending on somebody, and there's like doves flying around with all scrolls and stuff. Looks so cool. There's a Canonist with 8 weapon options. So this is a callback to, well, I think, again, a few weeks ago, we quite liked these old multi-part kits, where she's got 4 different ranged options and 4 close combat options that you can pick and choose between the four.
Feel like you're making your own HQ choice.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. And you could easily magnetise that and have all the weapon options.
Mm.
Put 4 extra arms on.
Yeah.
Servo arms.
Yeah, servo arms. Yeah.
Or you know, the four-armed emperors come knocking. And then there's Junith Arusha. who's a canonist superior on a massive eagle pulpit flamer flying thing of doom.
I didn't spot the four flamers at the bottom of this. That's really cool.
You know, if you're a religious fanatic that needs to do a sermon while incinerating heretics, that's what you need.
I'm part of a private Adeptus Mechanicus group on Facebook, and as soon as that model got revealed, they were like, we did that first with the Magos. Like, yeah. Hold on, they're copying. That's our tech.
Yeah, so that looks really cool, and I imagine we'll see all these will be the January releases, no doubt.
Yeah.
When we get into the new year. And then before we finish, the last little bit of news, which was on Facebook Warhammer page, I believe.
Yeah.
A little cryptic tease about all things come back round again, including bases or something.
Everything comes round, including squares.
Including squares.
Okay. So, and there was a picture of a lowly square base.
So we don't know what this is about. It's going to get revealed at 3 p.m. on Friday, which will probably be in the past by the time you listen to this podcast, and you'll probably already know what this is, but hey, yeah. that's the nature of the warp for you.
Yeah.
I think it is a new super modular Realm of Battle board set, so you can basically build your 6x4 board with millions of these little 25 bases. You can customise it. Every battle will be unique.
Yeah.
I know a few people commenting saying, I hope I don't have to rebase all my armies again.
I don't think Sigmar's going to turn to square base. I think there's two more likely possibilities. The first one, Horus Heresy is a more advanced rule set based on an old edition of the game. It's essentially the last edition of 40k, isn't it? With more complex rules. For the people who want to play that, to give them that outlet. Forge World, even though we've said that, we don't know what's happening with that, could well do a system, call it Warhammer Fantasy Battles, letting you, with up-to-date rules and just tweaks to the system, letting you replay these games. I don't think it's going to be this, but I wouldn't completely discount it.
Mm-hmm.
What's more likely, I think it's going to be Warhammer Legends, updated War Scrolls for all the old stuff. And people will be very disappointed because they've got themselves excited on this little teaser.
Somebody did mention Warmaster.
Warmaster didn't have square bases. It had long bases.
That's what I know. I'm just reading the comment.
So yeah, that's my thoughts. I don't know what you guys think.
I know a few people who'd be very happy to see the old rank and file regiments facing off against each other. And Age of Sigmar is a fantastic system. But I think there's room for both systems myself.
If I can six dice Cacophonic Choir, I'm all over it.
Yeah, my dwarf lines.
See, I've still got my old dwarf army on square bases, and I'm, if they updated like fantasy rules or whatever, I'd be more than happy to play it.
And you know what? Warhammer and AOS could sit side by side. Yeah. It's like the Heresy example. It's a more complex game with more, you know, investment to get into it, but it's an option for people who've got them, and maybe Games Workshop have realised that there is a big audience that would want to play the old game.
Do you think loads of people would be really upset that only a few weeks ago they got rid of loads of the old fantasy models from, like, Cities of Sigmar?
Well, unless they brought them back as direct only.
Nah.
They disappeared from Age of Sigmar to reappear. Mm.
Because they only have buy kits that you can't use in Sigmar, but if you could buy the kits for use in Warhammer, then, you know,
we need some X-Files music now, because...
Okay.
And that is the news.
and that wraps that up. There's no point you tweeting any what you think the square base thing's about, because you're going to know before this podcast is even out. So forget that idea. How about we just take a pause right now, and then we'll come back with a look at the Ogre Moor tribes. Okay, Andy, you have been invited on this podcast this week because you are a bit of an ogre expert. I know you are as well, Matt, but you're the real ogre expert, Matt.
Whoa. Oh, thanks, Dave.
Well, you know, you did use ogres when we tag-teamed on the Flippin' Heck Words.
The Doubles event.
Doubles event, yeah, thanks. Yeah. You took some ogres along with Stormcast, and we... smash some face on day two. Not on day one. On day two, we did.
I tell you what, if this book had been out then,
you'd have won that event.
Yeah.
Top tables.
Yeah,
top tables. Yeah, definitely. Should have happened. So yeah, we're not going to go quite into as much detail as we did last week with the Bone Reapers, because the Ogremaw Tribes has been out for a couple of weeks. A lot of you guys have probably already got it, but we still wanted to have a look at what is in the book and what we think about it, any key changes, and maybe talk about some list ideas. I know you've got a couple, Matt.
Yeah,
I've got one in mind, because I'm also starting Ogres in the new year, so I'm dead excited about this. So so yeah, let's where are we going to start with this?
Do you want to start with your allegiance abilities?
Yeah,
let's go off with that.
So straight off the bat, when you look at these allegiance abilities, for me personally, they seem really themed. Normally, when you get an army book, they typically write the rules to match the narrative.
Yeah,
and this for me suits them perfectly. So we've got the Ravenous Brutes rule. So if ogres are not within 3 inches of the enemy, they are hungry. So they get +2 to their move, which when you go through the war scrolls and they're all movement 6, realistically they're all movement 8.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about that rule as well, when they are in combat, they're eating, so which is awesome. So you get +2 bravery. So your big units of ogres... one of the nice things they did is add one of the banners also gives you +1 bravery. So when you look at them, they're actually bravery 9 when they're in combat.
Because so one of the biggest problems of ogres or in the past, I guess, is the low bravery. So
yeah, you could easily, if you didn't have a hero nearby to spend that inspiring presence, you could easily lose just as many ogres from Battleshock as you did from combat.
So this allows you to take those big groups of ogres now without worrying so much about...
Yeah.
Yeah, which is always a worry when you take big units and multi-room models.
Oh yes. Yeah. But yeah, we've got the ogre charges back. So now you roll a dice equal to the charge roll, and depending on the size of the units, you can do some mortal wounds. It's nice. It's very themed. I don't think it's going to be decimating units left, right and centres.
No, I mean, on a unit of 8 or more, you're dealing on 4 pluses, aren't you?
And the monsters as well,
and
yeah. Monsters.
And you know what? Get some cogs and stuff in there just to get another couple of dice.
I don't think you can use modifiers, can you?
No, it's just equal to the charge roll, and your cogs adds to the charge roll.
Equal to the unmodified charge roll.
Oh, unmodified, sorry, I take that back.
But, I mean, when we had that game the other day, Matt, you were dishing out a few mortal wounds. No, nothing spectacular, but... you were
picking away at units, though, isn't it?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, so we got prayers...
Maybe you, Dave, where your average charge roll's like 4 inches or something.
Yeah, I'm picking the wrong army, aren't I?
Just roll 4 sixes and then you just do 4 mortal wounds. It's fine.
Dave doesn't even know what a 6 looks like.
But, yeah, so we've added in prayers into a book. Now, interestingly enough, there's only one unit in the book that can use the prayers.
Ah, but there is a command trait you can give you guys to make him have prayers.
Oh.
I thought you were the expert at this, Andy. Come on.
I'm learning something new. But yeah, that's pretty much all the allegiance abilities. Obviously, we've got more tribes.
The tribes are pretty cool. What are your thoughts on the different tribes? I mean, there's nothing amazing. I mean, I fancy a shooty army, but I don't think the shooty one is actually the best for them. I think it extends the range of your weapons.
Is that the Underguts one?
Underguts, yeah. I think I prefer the magic one, where they all get an extra spell.
I think if you're looking at the tribes from a, air quotes, competitive point of view, then yeah, I think the Blood Gullet one, which is the Butcher one, I think that's probably the best one, because Butchers, I think, in terms of heroes... I'd put them probably on top. I think you're going to see two butchers in every single list.
These are your caster.
Yeah.
I really like the weapon as well. I used it in the game where if you cause a wound, all nearby ogres heal D3 wound, which is really good.
And butchers now are basically iron guts in terms of their damage. So for a wizard, for 140 points as well, he's like I said, I think you're going to see two butchers in most lists.
Yeah.
So jumping on... talking about butchers, the spell lore.
There's some pretty tasty stuff in the spells.
No pun intended.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some quirky ones, which at first glance you think are a bit iffy. So the first one, Flesh Crave Curse. Pick an enemy unit within 12 and do D6 mortal wounds. but then that unit adds one to their attack characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to be casting it on big blocks of infantry, but against...
A cheeky snipe on a character, or like a Stormcast Ballista or something that you can finish off.
Something like that,
yeah. Nobody's going to be scared of an extra attack on a Stormcast Ballista.
Oh, flashbacks.
Apart from mine.
But in terms of utility, you know, you've got a spell which gives you plus one attack, which is great, especially on Iron Guts. You've got another one, which is minus one from save rolls, which again, if you're taking loads of gluttons, which don't have any rend, super, super useful. And then there's another one, which is like minus one to hit. So
yeah, well, I really like the Firebelly one, which is a minus one to hit aura, which stacks with quite a few minus ones to hit throughout the book.
Yeah, so one of the... combos you can do is if you go for the Butcher and give him the questionable hygiene command trait, is subtract one from hit rolls for attacks made by enemy units while we're within six.
Yep.
So you can take that. You can take the minus one to hit spell. If you wanted to, you could take that Firebelly for minus one, and then you've got Geminids, Shards of Valagar, I think they're called. Yeah. So there's quite a lot of ways to get that minus one to hit in the army, and when you've got an army of about 30 models, if your opponent can't hit you, they can't kill you.
And you'll be quite a tight-knit army as well, so that aura for minus what? You can get up to minus three, minus four to hit. Shenanigans.
Yeah. What allies can you take? Can you take Moonclans?
They can take Trogoths, they can take Giants.
They can't take Moonclans.
So no. Giants aren't in the battle tome, which for me is annoying, because I've just
painted. It's a shame. Because I think the command traits would work for them as well.
In terms of the rest of the command traits, I mean, there's a few interesting ones, like for Hunter, if they start off the board, you gain D3 additional command points for every turn they're off, which is great.
Just keep them off the board. Gain extra command points.
So, the best one, I think, is for the Frost Lord. So, enemy units cannot retreat while they're within 3 inches of this general. So, I was speaking to Matt before the podcast started, and... for me, if you take Frostlord on Stonehorn, give him that command trait, which the only downside is it you can't take any of the tribes.
Yeah.
But if you take that, you can't retreat while they're within 3 inches of you. Take Ethereal Amulet on the Frostlord, so he's got a 3-up save that you can't rend. He's got a 5-up disgustingly resilient save now, which is sort of generic across all Stonehorns.
Yeah. It replaces the half damage rule, doesn't it?
It's a lot simpler, yeah. And then give him the mount trait, so his Stonehorn with his big horns, which are now damage 4 on the charge, hit and freeze.
Yeah.
So one of the big things with the ogres is I think we're going to struggle with things like more crushers, mega bosses. Well, mega bosses are more crushers, big units of hard boys. Dave's getting excited.
I've already beat the ogres once, so I can completely understand why you're worried.
So, you know, even units of witch elves, things along those lines. But the stuff that you don't want to charge into your relatively squishy gluttons.
And we said, you know, you can buff this with your butcher with those various hit modifiers as well.
You can minus one to it. Oh, I see. So the idea is you tie up the enemy's strong units and then they're locked in combat
with some just can't kill.
So
interesting.
That, I think, if I was going competitive with the ogres, I think that's for 400 points. He's 60 points cheaper, and he's gotten better.
Yeah.
Do the beast guys then? Do they also benefit from the if I'm outside of 3 inches, I'm hungry, so he gets a 3 inches.
Yeah, the ogres.
So this is a rapid. I mean, what's the movement of one of those things?
14, something like that.
Plus 3 inches. So you're going to be able to get your charge off against those key units. So 15 inch move plus your charge. Tie up a big unit of 30 witch elves, and then you just move around the flank with your glutton. Nice.
Yeah. So the thing you'll find quite quickly with ogres, especially gluttons, is they can hit, but they don't typically like being hit.
Yeah.
Because 4 wounds with a 5-up save, they are still quite squishy.
Mm.
So tying up units with board control, Frost Lord.
Because you found that in the game, you could take down a unit of ogres over time. You've got to get through them, but they're not that tough.
Yeah, and I had to really use more than one unit to do that, unless you're on a Maw Crusher. Like, my Gore Grunters went into your ogres, and yeah, they did quite a few wounds, but I probably killed an ogre. So, and then you punch me back. So, so yeah, I still think they're quite hard to take down. It's just all those wounds.
What do you think of the change about how many models they count as? So, an ogre counts as 2 models. The big beasties count as 10 models.
So, for the monsters, it's a huge buff. Like, absolutely massive. But then for the ogres, I think it's a bit situational still. Because even a big unit of 12, assuming you get them all within 6, but if you get them all within 6 of the objective, chances are there's no enemy models in.
Yeah.
So then if you have like 6 ogres, they count as 12, but then if your opponent's got more than 12, it doesn't matter.
It's easy to deal with 6 ogres. Well, the big blocks, a bit, you've got to shift them, but a few ogres are going to drop.
I think for the monsters, it's great because you can run a monster army and feel like you've got 60 models instead of 6.
Yeah.
But with the little ogres, I say little ogres, ogres, I think it's only going to make a big difference when you've got 3 ogres on objective and someone brings down like canary harpies or heartrenders or whatever, at which point they've got to kill an ogre before they take that objective. I think it buffs that small, low model count army, but I don't know if it's enough.
Okay.
But monsters, yeah, 10 models is great.
I mean, I'm tempted to do a fully Stonehorn / Thundertusk army. That'd be fun.
Well, one of the tribes really buffs that because it gives all of the monsters in your army mount traits. And with the mount traits, I think the monsters become worth 300 points. I mean, we were having a discussion again before we started comparing Thundertusk Beast Riders and Stonehorns to steam tanks.
Yeah. Which are infinitely cheaper.
Yeah, 100 points cheaper. But then when you put mount traits on them, the Stonehorns are hitting them threes with their horns. The Thundertusk has a really, really good one, which I think if they don't charge... Yeah, if this model has not made a charge move in the same turn, enemy units within 3 inches of this model start the combat phase, fight at the end of the combat phase.
Yep.
So it's basically like Slaanesh's Locus.
Yeah.
So with those, I think the Beastclaw Raiders aspect of the army gets a huge, huge buff, especially on monsters. But yeah, mount traits I think are fantastic. More tribes, again, fantastic.
Cool. So what's your list that you're focusing for then?
Well, to start off with, it's the stuff I've got painted. But I've got 2 lists. One which is fun, which I'm taking to a campaign weekend at Warmworld this coming weekend.
Oh, nice.
And then I've got another one which includes the Stonehorn, which we've just discussed about. But to start off with, Tyrant, 2 Butchers, a big unit of 12 Gluttons, 2 small units of 3, because... why not? You have to battle line.
Yeah.
4 Iron Guts, because in my infinite wisdom, I built 3 units of 3 originally, and we've all got banners, so I've got to painstakingly go out and buy more Iron Guts now. So 4 Iron Guts, Aelgusla Gargan, Thunder Tusk, and then I've managed to squeeze in 10 Uruk Hearthguard as a mercenary unit.
Oh, nice.
I mean, that's for, like, you know, nice friendly games, that sort of stuff. In terms of competitive, pretty much the same, but I lose the Giant, the Thundertusk Beast Rider, and the Tyrant, and gain basically 2 Frost Lords, which, you know, one of them decked out like that, and then the other one just standard, normal Frost Lords, so...
Okay, I mean, I've been toying with a list, which is only a few drops, as the Gormand Battalion, Tyrant Slaughtermaster Butcher, 12 Lead Belchers, 12 Gluttons, 8 Iron Guts, and a Soul Scream Bridge with the Magic Heavy Faction. And basically just... I was toying with the shooty Ogre Moor tribe, but I can get around the range with the bridge and just throw these ogres up the other side of the board and then 12d6 shots into whatever they want to kill and then charge them as well.
Mm.
Plus, if you think 12-inch move, but then your movement 8 when you're not in combat, so it's a 20-inch range.
Yeah.
But then with lead belchers, they still have that rule where if they stay stationary, you get d6 shots.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's quite a few lists you can do. I mean, they're not Slaanesh level. They're certainly not a broken list, but it seems a balanced army.
overall, the battle tome, I mean, you've just discussed about having a shooty army. If you want, you can build a monster army, shooting army, combat army, dare I say, a Noble horde army. So the battle tome itself is fantastic, depending on how you want to play the army.
Yeah.
I did write myself a mixed list, which had monsters and your normal ogres in it, but good. While we're on the subject of Warhammer, this really annoys me with the Warhammer app, where suddenly it says, oh, you need to subscribe to Azir. So all my lists that I've created have gone. And I have to reinstall the app, and because it won't let me, because I've already subscribed, so it'll just tell me when I click subscribe.
Yeah.
You're already subscribed. It's like, great.
What he's done is they've got an algorithm they run, and if your lists are really rubbish, they knock your subscription
my
off.
My big wall was in there. So I can't remember what was in my ogre list, but I think it had a Frost Lord with two units of two Mournfang, a big unit of 12 Gluttons, some Iron Guts and Tyrant's Guard, because I really like I really like the idea of keeping my Tyrant alive, because I mean, he's a powerhouse, isn't he?
Oh,
he can dish out a serious amount of damage, so by having those Iron Guts taking the wounds for him, it's keeping him in the fight longer.
And Iron Guts are really good. They've got kind of the magic resistance that dwarfs used to have.
Oh dear. Poor dwarfs.
Yeah, the battalions, looking at them, the buffs you get, I don't think are, you know, amazing.
No.
But when you consider any one of those battalions, with the exception of maybe a drunk mob, which is all knoblars and scrap launchers, you could basically build almost a 2,000-point list out of any of those battalions.
Yeah.
Like, maybe throw in another two butchers into most of them, and you've got a 2,000-point list sorted.
Low drops. You've got your extra artifacts in there as well.
And points-wise, none of the battalions are massively overcosted either.
About 140 on average, something like that?
Yeah.
With battalions, do we think it's a little bit weird with the Beastclaw centred ones that a lot of them are featured around a Thundertusk as the main HQ unit rather than the Frostlord on Stonehorn?
Yeah, so all three of there's four. One's which is Hunters and Sabres, but the others are all Huskards, whether it be on Stonehorns or Thundertusks.
Hmm. It's a bit weird, I thought.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people go for the Frostlord, don't they? But the only one he's in is the big, chunky one that you're never going to take because it's super expensive battalion.
Yeah. I think it's to tempt you to take those units.
Yeah.
I mean, one of them, the Earlbad, an unmodified hit roll of a 6, does a mortal wound. So with those Huskar and Stonehorn, which... The Huskard himself doesn't really do any damage. For Stonehorn, you know, once you give it a mount trait, it's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But it just gives it a little bit of a buff to units that, in my opinion, looking through the battle tome, need the buff.
I mean, he's more support with the prayers anyway, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the battalions, I think, are all fantastic. You can do armies based around any of them. In terms of war scrolls, I think the Tyrant... We were having a chat about this before. The Tyrant, like you say, is a powerhouse. You know, his war scroll now has been updated with the Feast of Bones model.
Yeah.
He's
basically, he's got all the different weapon options you use to be able to take on a Tyrant. He's carrying them all now because he's that nails.
Yeah. His command ability as well. You pick a Gutbuster unit within three, do D3 mortal wounds, and then you don't take battle shock. So we were having a chat about this with big units of 12 ogres. Do that turn one, and then all of a sudden you haven't got to worry about Battleshock.
Yeah,
yeah. You've got the healing abilities in the book as well to heal them back up anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
This is it. I think I basically bullied most of my units first
turn. One.
Didn't
I? You took the... Did you take the first? No, I had the first turn. In your first turn, you slapped them around a bit, did a few mortal wounds, and then you sort of...
So the Slaughter Priest failed at life, took a load of wounds,
and
trying to cast
just healed them all up. So yeah. I mean, with the Tyrant that I'm going to be taking, I'm very tempted to give him the Sky Titan pistols.
Oh, that increases it to four
to
shots?
Six shots. Yeah, six shots. And I mean, what are they? -1 D3 damage.
Yeah.
They're brilliant. I just want my Tyrant to dish out all the damage.
Fair
all
enough.
All of the damage.
Remember the doubles event, Dave?
Well, yeah, I do. I know it can go horribly wrong.
But yeah, looking through War Scrolls, Slaughtermaster now, he's gotten a bit of a buff.
The Slaughtermaster didn't perform great in the game we had. Every time he went rummaging in his cauldron, he ended up losing himself.
Yeah.
But the, some of the buffs that you can hand out are pretty good.
I think you were very unlucky with him, because if you weren't rolling ones and wounding yourself, you were doing that one where he does damage to nearby enemy units.
Yeah.
When he was on his, when he had no enemy units around him. So I think you were very unlucky with the stuff he was pulling out.
Butcher's very good. I like the Butcher.
Yeah, but in terms of overall heroes, I think the Butcher's probably the standout choice in terms of how good it is for its points.
Yeah.
So like I said, in terms of damage, if you give it the tenderizer, it's basically an iron gut. It's still got the voracious maw spell, which after they got rid of Foot of Gork, I was convinced they were going to get rid of voracious maw as well.
You were a bit scared about this spell, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I think you did cast it, didn't you?
But then I failed to cast. I didn't cast many spells. I'd had a terrible game.
Well, I think you tried to cast it on my mega boss, and I was like, oh, please don't take my mega boss off.
Yeah, so basically it does, I think it's D3 mortal wounds, then on a 4 plus it keeps going, and it keeps going until it fails.
Yeah.
Back when Age of Sigmar first came out, before General's Handbook or any of this, I went South Coast GT and I took a Celestine Prime and Stormcast list and played against ogres. And the ogre player did about, I think it was 28 mortal wounds to the Celestine Prime. And then I had to tell my opponent to stop rolling the dice.
He's already dead.
So, in terms of a Butcher, standout choice in terms of heroes. And again, with command traits, you can get, with a command trait, you can get them casting two spells, so you don't have to take the Maw Tribe. But for 140 points, I think they're fantastic. Ogre gluttons. One thing we should say is all ogres, in terms of normal ogres, got the gulping bite, so it's just an extra attack, freeze and freeze, no rend, one damage.
And there's a spell as well where unmodified sixes do mortal wounds as well.
Yeah, the Slaughtermaster's Rock Chomper. But the one thing that really got me excited, especially about the Gutbusters side, is they all hit on freeze.
It's so much better.
When I took them to the Purple Spock Unicorn one day back in March, I think it was, and they were hitting on fours, I had 12 ogres fighting 10 spider riders and I only killed 8.
Yeah.
Because they were hitting on fours.
There's something disheartening about taking big piles of dice and then just none of them hit.
And nothing comes from it. But the next unit, Iron Guts, I was convinced they were going to change it from damage 3 to damage 2.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw that War Scroll, when they announced for like the little,
oh, you could see the little previews. Card.
Yeah. And I saw that, I was over the moon. I mean, obviously they've updated the unit size now to match the box, so you get for 220 points. So effectively, for an extra 40 points to what you used to pay, you get an extra model, plus one to hit, and an extra 4 gulping bite attacks.
Yeah,
which for 40 points is fantastic. Obviously, you still got lead belchers. If you want to take shooting armies, you can do.
In the unit of 4 or more, they're battle line as well.
Yes, yeah. So again, you don't have to worry about gluttons or iron guts if you're going to go down that route.
I think something we've seen in the recent books where you can pretty much build whatever army you want to build now.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the battalions, in some ways it's a little bit annoying because you have to still take iron guts and gluttons. But if you wanted to, you can just take 3 big units of lead belchers and then max the rest. In terms of Beast Claw Raider stuff, obviously you got the Frost Lord and Stonehorn still powerhouse. Huskards. I'm still a little bit annoyed that the Huskard and Stonehorn isn't a priest.
Yeah.
It's only the one that's on the Thundertusk, isn't it? It's a priest. I was disappointed to see, I can probably see why, because it was really powerful. They've changed their snowball attack now.
Yeah.
So instead of just doing 12 mortal wounds when they weren't wounded, they now do, sorry, I think you roll 12 dice, don't you? And any 6s do a mortal wound.
Yeah, so start off with your roll 12 dice, and it's dependent upon the size of the unit. If it's less than 10, it's on 6s you do mortal wounds, and then if it's 10 or more, it's 5s. If it's 20 or more, it's 4s, which is great because now it's not sniping out characters.
Yeah, that's true.
It used to be a 2 plus. You just
it was a bit silly. Wounds.
Yeah. Which, when you look at the Mortec Crawler from the Bone Reaper book, it's gone the complete opposite way.
Yeah.
The Stonehorn and Thundertusk, they changed, you know, like the Stone Skeleton, like you say, the Snowball attack.
Icefall Yetis.
Icefall Yetis, yeah. They've kept them pretty much the same, except they've dropped the points. Yeah. So now 110 instead of 120.
And they're still battle line. Were they used to wear battle line, weren't they? I'm sure they're still battle line.
They're nice models.
Battle line if are your they? General is mounted on a Thunder Tusk.
They have that classic feel to
them. I do like the Frost Saber models, but they look like you would only really take them if you had a Hunter.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, we get +3 to charge if a holy within 6 inches of a Hunter, and I think one of the battalions gives you additional +1.
Mm.
So that's why Dave likes them, +4 to charge.
+4 to charge.
So a 9-inch charge, 5-inch charge, got a command point, because you've given your Hunter the D3 command point
thing. Yeah.
And, you know.
Still rolling double ones.
But again, the Hunter and the Frost Sabres, it gives you a nice little unit where you can outflank, gives you a bit more manoeuvrability, that sort of thing.
Also, rumours say that the Ogre faction for Underworld is going to be a Hunter and some Frost Sabres, so we might get some new models for these plastic soon as well.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Mm.
Really like the idea of that.
And then you've got Mornfang. So Mornfang, for me, I was quite fortunate and I built mine with clubs and iron fists. But looking at the book in general, I think in terms of War Scroll updates, we've done a fantastic job, with the exception of Mornfang and some of the Beastclaw Raider stuff.
Yeah.
Because the Gargant Hacker only has 2 attacks, but when you factor in you've got four attacks from the Tusks, 2 attacks is fine. But they hit on 4s.
Yeah.
And for me, if you're going to make all ogres hit on 3s, why not do it for Gargant Hackers?
Yeah, and they don't get the bite either, do they?
No, they don't get the bite, no. They get the Tusks, which are 4 attacks, 4s, 3s, -1, 1 damage. But then if they charge, they get 2 damage. If you take the Huskard on Stonehorn, his command ability gives them additional damage on the charge.
Yeah, I mean, the Beast Claw side seems very much on the synergies. You need to make sure you've got the right mix of stuff.
Yeah.
Where the kind of ogre side, you're a bit more freeform. You can do whatever you like.
Yeah. I think Mornfang, I would have been happy to pay 320 points and the Gargant Hackers hit on 3s.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing looking at that there is you're trading off against the Rend, aren't you? So you drop into a 4+, but you've got a Rend, whereas if you take the clubs, you've got no Rend, but you're hitting on 3s.
Yeah.
You'd be better off doing the -1 save spell.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you can put the +1 attack spell on them, so 3 attacks, but again, still hitting on 4s, so it's... I think they're fine, but just I would have liked a little bit more punch from them.
You know what I'm disappointed with is the Man-Eaters, because I love the models, I just love them to have slightly better rules. I mean, yeah, you've got the different abilities you can pick, but I don't know.
Well, one of the first lists I wrote had Man-Eaters in them because I really like the models as well, and I've always wanted a reason to buy them.
Yeah,
especially the one with the abacus and the pirate one. They're really cool.
I bought the Paymaster one with the abacus. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
I want the pirate and the ninja one.
The ninja one as well. Yeah, that's cool.
I just think Iron Guts are better.
Yes, yeah. I mean, again, you look at Mornfang, 280 points, but then you could take 4 Iron Guts, save yourself 60 points, and they hit harder.
Yeah.
Well, the list I originally wrote had Man-Eaters in them, but then I wanted to add a battalion because I wanted the extra artifact, so it just made sense to change them out for Iron Guts and take the battalion.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I will say with Man-Eaters is you can give them the special rule Striders, so they can run in charge, which is one thing that Stonehorns have lost in this book. So if you think the movement 6, the hungry 8, you can run automatically 6 with a command point. So mental maths, that's 14. Plus a 6-inch charge on average.
You could try a cheeky first turn charge, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, putting one of these units on the flank, not a bad shout.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you've still got fire belly. Not quite as good as the Butcher.
I quite like him as like a support mage, though. He's got that -1 to hit aura. His flame attack's a very short range. I think I'd rather have another couple of inches on it.
Yeah, 3 inches, and then you roll 1 dice for every enemy unit within 3 on a 4+, it's ET3. I think if you're going to cast that spell, it should just be automatic.
Yeah.
Or...
It sounds like you'd use him as sort of like a kamikaze unit. Yeah. Launch him at an enemy unit.
You know what I missed? The Hellheart. Because that was the great thing in Warhammer. We went over and just blew up the brains of every wizard on the table.
Saying that, I think he's well worth taking for that -1 aura. I really wanted to stop you from casting that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, looking at it, I think it's cast on...
Seven, is it?
Cast on an eight.
Oh, an eight. Yeah. It's quite a hard spell.
But the scenery piece, which we haven't mentioned, the Moor Pot, which I was painting it today, it's got carrots in it.
It has
carrots in it. I didn't realise that.
It's got carrots
and heads.
Carrots and heads, yeah.
Mm.
Basically counts as arcane terrain for the ogres. And then once per game, you can expend that ability and heal D3 wounds to all ogre units.
I think it's a 36-inch bubble, which is it's a big aura, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite as good as the Necropolis. I forgot the name of it.
The big,
Bone Nexus Tithe, something like that.
Yeah,
Bone Tithe Nexus.
Not quite as good as that, but when you look at like a minus one to hit spell, cast on a six, cast on a five.
Yeah. The only sad thing is that you really, to refill it, you need the Dracoline Heart because nobody's going to get near it to give you that free heal.
Yeah.
What are the rules of deploying that thing?
It has to go outside territory. Of it, 12 inches away from enemy territory, I believe.
You really want that on like on an objective, don't you? So your enemy's got to go to that objective.
I think that's the outside of objectives as well.
And it's a 6-inch range, isn't it, to refill?
Yeah.
But you only have to kill a model. You don't have to kill a unit. It can just be a model.
Yeah, but okay, you can easily avoid it.
What flavour stew do you like?
Yeah, if an enemy model is slain within 6 inches, you can refill it. So, yeah, as far as terrain features go...
It looks really cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it helps for butchers. And when you're actually building it, it's actually big enough that you can fit a butcher underneath the canopy.
Yeah, I really love that.
Overall, I'm super happy with the book. I know it's been almost a year waiting for it. I think the Gutbuster side of it, super solid. Beastclaw Raider side of it, I think if you build the army right, I think it's fine. But
yeah. The only weird thing is the imbalance between these guys, which is really solid, but balanced book with lots of different options, compared to the Bone Reapers, who have some really, really silly strong stuff.
If I was comparing the two books, I'd actually say they're pretty on par with each other.
Okay.
I'd have to give a slight advantage to the Bone Reapers simply because they've got Nagash, Arcan, and the Mortec Crawler, which I still can't believe hits on twos and does five damage. And even with that Lookout Sir bonus, it's hitting on threes. But, you know, whatever.
Lore-wise, what's the book like lore-wise? Is there anything new in there? Anything about the Realm of Beast? Any hints about what might be coming? Any new factions you've seen?
Lore-wise, sadly, I've not actually read that much of the lore yet.
Yeah.
Other than the reason why we've had to wait so long for the book is because the ogres have been so content with their food supply that until the Necroquake has happened, which has killed off a large food supply, they've had to venture out into the Mortal Realms forever.
So they're just going shopping for
food. Shopping. Battletome going to Tesco.
Yeah.
New realm announced.
That's interesting, isn't it? You get some factions that want to take over the Mortal Realms, there's other factions that want to defend their territory. These guys seem like they just want to get out of life. They just want some, yeah.
You just want to do the big shop. Brilliant. Well, I mean, it looks like a really good book. The My Army that I'm starting in January, when we kickstart some new forces, I'm really looking forward to having some games, and especially after playing against you, Matt. I've been fancying some Beast Claws forever, so it'd be cool to have them on the table.
Their heads will look nice on my Chaos Lord on Lizards trophy rack.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for that, Andy. We're going to take a slight pause now. But when we come back, we've got our top threes and your top threes. So stay listening. It is time for our favourite segment on this podcast, and that is our top three. So this week, really out there, we wanted to know what our top three ideas for battle boxes would be. These could be as bonkers as you want. So we're going to read out our choices, and then to finish off the podcast, we'll go through social media and read out your choices. Matt, would you like to start us off with your third choice?
Why not? My battle box is going to be a callback to one of the first Warhammer boxes I ever bought. And this would be an Age of Sigmar battle box containing Bretonians reimagined for the Mortal Realms fighting, I don't know, lizard men, let's say, in a callback to the 5th edition starter box, which was brilliant. I mean, the models look a bit rubbish now, but back at the time, it was such a good box where you got the Bretonian knights and you got the Saurus warriors and the skinks.
There was something in that box for everybody. You're a traditional medieval fan, you've got your Bretonians, you're a wacky far out, you've got your lizard men.
So if you took that through a new Age of Sigmar kind of light, how cool would that be? Even if it was, I don't know, Bretonians riding monsters or something as a kind of a human force on Pegasuses and griffins and stuff. And then get some weird new, maybe a new Slan Mage Priest model in there.
Yeah, some cool sort of like Seraphon tech or something.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I like it.
Ace.
And can you pre-order that one, Matt?
My third choice is from Warhammer 40,000, and this is going to be Astra Militarium against Tyranids.
Ooh.
Now,
that sounds like a buffet to me.
The key thing is this, obviously, you would totally have a brand new guard army, like, because Cadian's gone on it. Cadian's gone.
Ooh. So. What about Deathcore Krieg?
Nah, I'm thinking more high tech, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe more in line with the Enforcers from Necromunda.
So maybe more like a planetary defence force.
Yeah. Against a Tyranid army. Now, the key thing about this Tyranid part of this box is you get, it's going to be, it's about the sort of the coming down to the planet. So this isn't the main Tyranid invasion. This is going to include a new plastic lictor.
Oh, Vanguard. Ooh. Tyranids.
Yeah. Ooh. With some Gene Stealers, maybe a Death Leaper in there.
What about some different builds of Tyranids to make different Tyranid units out of a new Gene Stealer kit?
Well, these are sneaky nids.
Stealth Tyranids. Invisible Gene Stealers.
There you go.
Just bases.
And of course, you get some woodland scenery in there and stuff.
You could get some like pipe scenery pieces that are deployment zones for these new Gene Stealers.
Yeah. So because I think the lictors, they're a really cool concept in Tyranid army, but their data sheet's terrible and the model's really
what
old.
What about, and I'm ambushing your battle box here, what about a lictor HQ choice, like a big lictor?
We got the Death Leaper, which is kind of an elite choice, but yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah.
Right, you're getting too excited, Matt.
I am. I
want to Dave's keeping it real, and you're just going crazy.
Can I order
That's
two
not what this is
about. So there's my third choice. Andy, what is your third choice?
So my third choice is a bit of a silly one. But having seen you paint your Mega Boss and Maw Crusher on Twitter, I've gone for an army in a box, and it is a Mega Boss on Maw Crusher, a Mega Boss on Maw Crusher, and Gordrak. Because after those three, what else do you need in the army?
But who would they be against?
Everyone.
Against your wallet.
I was saying to Matt the other day, I really want a Gordrak and I really want to run a two more crush. I don't know if I'd push to three. Can you even make a three?
We worked out you can if you use some of the old orc kits that are no longer available.
Okay.
Yeah. Until they get FAQ'd out in June, I'm sure that's all fair game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's always narrative play all over the place.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not going to argue with that because, I mean, I'm all over the orcs at the moment. Jay, your third choice.
My third choice is a Warhammer 40,000 box, and it pits the Exodite Eldar against some Slaanesh followers. So not Slaanesh demons. So this is on the fringes of the galaxy, you know, a backwater, no one's heard of planet. The Exodites are living peacefully, and some Slaanesh followers on some random space hulk crash into the planet, and they found an Exodite world with their... The infinity equivalent. I can't remember what it's called. It's half the world thing, isn't it? It's like the equivalent of the Infinity Matrix where all our souls go, and it's brilliant. It's party time for the Slaanesh followers. So I'm thinking on the Slaanesh side, you've got all kinds of cultists and mortals and people being sort of mutated into sort of half demon, half mortal, you know, snakes and things like that. Maybe a demon prince as the character leading it. And then on the Exodite side, you've got your regular Exodite footmen, you've got Exodites on dinosaurs, you've got some cool mix of Eldar technology fused with fauna off the planet, and they're protecting their world spirits. On their side, they'll have some sort of Exodite lord on a big T-Rex or something like that.
For a big model, and I can't remember what it's called, but what about the Slaaneshi Knight, which kind of had a bit of a Warwalker aesthetic?
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Ace, your second choice, Matt.
My second choice is In the Age of Sigmar, and this pits Teclis and his angelic light elves against the hordes of Malarian shadow elves in a light versus dark elven battle that everyone will buy multiple copies of because it's going to be ace.
You could do like this sort of Pokemon type thing here where you could have to have two versions of the game, like a dark
light and light. Dark. Yeah, that'd be really cool. Similar to the Sisters of Battle box where you get a limited edition battle tome in there as well. Yeah, let's do that. There's two battle boxes, one light, one dark, or a bundle with both of them together for no discount, but you get some War Scroll cards.
Cool. My second choice is also going to have Orcs in it. This is for the Iron Jaw side, or the Big War side, all mounted, a new Grot allied, like Grots back in with the green guys on the walls, like you've seen in the Warhammer Underworld box, with maybe a unit of Gorgrunners, but then importantly led by a Orc mega boss on a Gorgrunter. As a new HQ option, because a lot of people have been crying out when this new Auric Warclans book came, everybody was like, please let there be a mega boss on, like a midway point between a mega boss on foot and a mega boss on Warcrusher. Give us one on a Gorgrunner against a brand new Mortal Bretonnian kind of army, which is
cool.
Completely mounted. I was envisioning them all on Pegasus, a proper mounted battle box of all mounted Aurochs against mounted mortals. I did have a cool name for it and I can't think what it was, but yeah, that's what I really like to see, all brand new models as well.
Jousting in the mortal realms,
that'd be ace, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Your second choice, Andy.
So my second choice, I'm hoping, I'm making a prediction here, hoping, and it's Carajon Overlords versus Grot Bag Scuttlers, which I've just finished reading the Gloomspike Git book. And there's several stories in there where they're mentioned as being grots with effectively airships, and they take over a Carajon Overlord skyport with the help of some Moonclan grots which just come along for the ride. And my thought would be Carajon Overlord, so you get maybe a the small ship.
Gunstock Gunhauler,
some Thunderers, Arcanauts, and maybe a Navigator against clearly the superior fleet in the Grot Bag Scuttlers, and have a big ironclad type Grot Bag Scuttler ship.
Pirate ship,
yeah, with like
Goblin Doom Divers.
You know, exactly. What? You know, yeah. What? So the Caradrons, they use ether gold, don't they, as propulsion. What about some kind of like inflatable squig hot air balloon?
Oh, sold. Yeah.
So yeah, that's my second choice.
A squid cannon mounted at the front, just firing squids. Awesome. Your second choice, Jay?
My second choice is in the 40,000 universe, but not in the 40,000 game system. This is the next expansion or next box for Adeptus Titanicus, and it pits the forces of the Eldar against the forces of the Orcs.
Yes!
Revenant Titans, Phantom Titans versus Gargant Stompers. What are the Morkanauts and Gorkanauts? Yeah.
Great Gargants.
New dashboard console panels for in the style of the Eldar and the Orcs for your Titans. New war gear cards, all with new artwork to reflect the two Xenos species.
That'd be so cool.
Some scenery pieces. It could be, Eldar ruins or Orc sort of like shanty towns.
Yeah, that'd be ace. I want to buy that box. Yeah. I want to buy all these boxes so far.
I think Andy's winning at the moment. Andy's winning. Yeah, that's such a cool choice. But we're not finished because we've got our top choices coming. So, Matt, let us know what your top choice is.
I had a choice and I've scribbled it out because I thought I was thinking too small. It was Squats versus Dark Mechanicum. That'd be pretty cool.
It would be pretty cool.
But, you know, this is dream battle boxes, so I've gone for a really sensible one. So, with the Psychic Awakening event going on throughout the galaxy, could we see the Master of Mankind return? And if the Master of Mankind did return, we need to set him up in a battle box containing the Emperor against the greatest force the galaxy has ever known, the biggest threat to the survival of humanity, and that is the Rebel Grots.
Emperor versus Rebel Grots.
Now, I admit, that doesn't seem like a level playing surface. So what you need is a new mount for the Red Gobbo. And I'm thinking, Plastic Warlord Titan.
Plastic Warlord.
With the Red Gobbo, some Gretchen versus the Master of Mankind. £50. Everyone wants one for Christmas.
So I don't know who would win. I don't know who would win.
No.
Grots.
Well, you really did go. That went from squats versus Dark Mechanicum to
that escalated.
All kinds of. Well, my top choice is really, well, is out there because this would never happen. But my battle box is
Dark Angels. Mine would happen.
Dark Angels versus World Eaters. Right? So this sounds pretty realistic so far. Until you realise there's a plastic Lionel Johnson in there against a plastic Angron.
I actually think this is a neat idea, Dave, because we're obviously forcing, pitting forces of good against forces of evil. You've gone for the traitor on chaos versus chaos, which is quite a unique spin on the battle box. I like it.
But I just want to see a plastic Lionel Johnson.
We're thinking 40k or 30k?
40k, of course.
A Demon Angron.
Demon Angron versus...
See, I actually had one of my honorary choices was Dark Angels versus the Alpha Legion, because I thought these two factions, you've got the Dark Angels, are they loyalists?
Who are the bad guys in this box?
And you've got the Alpha Legion, exactly. Are they loyalists? Are they traitors?
It's the Dark Angels, they're the traitors.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we know that.
Your first choice, Andy.
So my first choice takes us to Middle Earth.
Ooh.
So fitting on with the War of the Rohan stuff, which is coming out soon. My ideal battle box would be the Defenders of Helm's Deep with an actual Helm's Deep big scenery kit against 100 Uruk-hai.
Yes!
And just have Aragorn, Legolas, Gimli, some elves, that guy who fights the fish. Theoden sitting back at the back,
Gambling looking happy,
and with a big horn on the side with a Gimli model that has rules for blowing the horn when everyone else rides out.
What about if in your massive big scenery piece you could actually blow the horn?
Oh yeah,
that'd be ace.
I think it'd be loud.
Okay, Jay, do you want to finish us off with your top choice?
Well, I thought my top choice was going to blow you all out of the water just with the what I'm trying to do with this battle box, but I don't think I can top Emperor versus Grotz, to be fair. I think you lot are thinking too small, with the exception of Matt and his Grotz. So really, I'm thinking you two are thinking too small. You've just got one force versus another force. No. I'm taking battle boxes to the next level. This battle box is going to pit the forces of the Duke Dwardin versus the Moon Clan Grotz versus the Skaven. Three armies in one battle box.
Ooh, you could have a triangular realm of battle that comes out with it as well.
Obviously... new models for all the dwarfs. I'm thinking the equipment they take down into, because this is all going to be based underneath the mountains. So they're going to have like Ironbreaker, elite Ironbreaker units, golems, war machines they bring up. Your Moon Clan Grotz, different kinds of squig units and things like this. The Skaven, they've got all the technology anyway, all the weird machines they bring down. It's going to be good.
So you basically want to go back to Warhammer Fantasy?
Also, no, I just want lots of models in the box. This battle box, as well as containing three armies, it also comes with Miracle Dice.
Only for the dwarves, though.
Oh, yeah, dwarves, yeah, of course.
I did have one honourable mention.
Oh, go on.
The Seraphon have mysteriously appeared in the Warhammer 40,000 universe, and they've ended up on the same planet as the Exodites. So you've got a battle box, Seraphon versus the Exodites. It's called Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Or Dino Crisis.
Or Dino Crisis, yeah. Any honourable mentions? No?
No.
We all dried up?
I want to buy all these boxes. Yeah. Got a problem.
Yeah. Cool. We hope you enjoyed those choices, but we have got one more segment left, and that's us reading out your choices, so keep listening. So we are on to the last segment of this week's podcast. So we're going to read out our community top three picks. I'm going to start over on Instagram, and then I think you've got some over on Twitter, Matt. So over on Instagram, Gabawaki said an ode to fantasy, new Seraphon, and better Cities of Sigmar.
Better Cities of Sigmar?
Better Cities of Sigmar.
More dwarves.
Yeah.
More dwarves.
Gunwich UK says new orc figures, prime orcs, decent Gaz, grot engineers, and artillery grots.
Grots sound good to me.
That sounds like grots versus grots.
Yeah.
Stephen Roberts 274, some XV-46 Vanguard Void battlesuits for the Tau to go Space Hulk exploring.
Oh, yeah.
Might be useful in lieu of a hand-to-hand cut capability.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And then something to hunt. Gene Stealers or orcs, it's mainly about the Tau, really. I'd love to see some new Tau battlesuits.
Tau versus Tyranids would be a good box.
Yeah, it would. Completely, like, different ways of warfare. And finally on Instagram, Scold Painting says, some form of knightly faction facing off with some strange lizard creatures. Wait a minute, that sounds familiar. Puzzle face emoji.
Well, over on Twitter, David Metcalf says, Orc and Squat Warlords for Adeptus Titanicus, Stomper Gargons and new improved Squat Leviathans. That'd be cool. Fabius Fulgrim says, Alpha Legion versus Raven Guard, World Eaters versus Black Templars, and Emperor's Children versus Iron Hands. Too soon. Martin says, Armageddon Steel Legion with new Guardsmen, a new Yarrick, Lehman Russ and a Chimera versus a new Gazgul, Plastic Mega Dread and New Orc Boys. That'd be a pretty cool box.
My brother used to love the Steel Legion. Armageddon Steel Legion. In fact, yeah. He used to like all the races. He used to like Orcs, Black Templars and Armageddon Steel Legion. He was just an Armageddon fan.
Somber Mind says, Dark Angels versus Fallen, with an exclusive Primaris Dark Angels character. Elves of Light versus Slaves to Darkness. That'd be pretty cool. And Squats versus Renegade Knights. That'd be an ace of battle box. I'd buy that. Rodri Morgan Smith says, Gorn's Ghost versus Blood Pact Sons of Sek, with Udeshi Tanks. Three different types of Ghost Troopers to represent Tanith, Vergust, and Belladon subunits. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Mousebait says Skaven versus Grots, non-metal / fine cast plastic characters, new sculpts, character versus character with squads of 5 plague monks, new fanatics, multiple squigs versus rats, squig launcher versus warp lightning cannon, monster squig versus new sculpted rat ogre, and Dyson objective markers. Mr. Goldie says, I'd like to start by saying we've had some amazing boxes come out recently, so it's going to be hard to top them. But Light Elves or Kernothi versus Chaos-Fueled Malarian Elves. Mike Lodes, Malarians Dark Elves versus New Zeench Mortals. Slaanesh Mortals versus Tyrian and Teclis Elves. World Eaters versus Raven Guard, a repeat of Istvan 5. New Berserkers, Red Butchers and Primaris Assault Marines.
Yeah.
Ape of Sigmar says Seraphon versus Bone Splitters. And then we had one more shout out from Pillock, who looks like he followed us just to share this tweet. Radical versus Puritan Inquisition. Ooh. I know David be on that.
Yeah. Oh, it could be. That could be like a, like you could get a load of scenery in that, like the underhives and the corridors of the new Zone
Mortalis kind of stuff. Vampires versus Kernothi.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And Adeptus Arbites versus Traitor Guard.
Oh, yeah, makes sense.
So yes, really, really cool shout outs there.
Yes, thank you again for all your picks. Keep them coming on future podcasts. Now, we have had a special guest with us this week, Mr. Andy Woods.
Oh, you want me? Sorry.
You're a regular now, Jay. You're as regular as the chairs in this room. Yeah, that's a random thing.
It was wasn't it?
It's late, Matt. It's late. It's been a long week. So, Andy, you are one of the founding members of the Purple Sparkle Unicorns, a gaming group that we rabbit on about on this podcast a lot. You've got a big event coming up.
Yeah, so we've got a 40k one coming out, not this weekend, next weekend, which is 24th of November, called The Ashes of the Imperium, which, funnily enough, is a 40k one. Bizarrely enough, it's sold out.
Sold out.
Excellent.
So the last two 40k ones, well, after this one, have both sold out.
That's impressive.
And then we've got another one in January, which is an Age of Sigmar one, which I'm going to get the dates wrong, I know I am now. It is on the 24th and 25th of January. No, it's on the 25th and 26th of January.
The Saturday and Sunday.
2,000 points. It's called The Descent of the Faithful. There's a post on the TGA forums. If you just type in Purple Sparkly Unicorns, it'll come up. But as of right now there's only two tickets left.
If Andy, you couldn't maybe get tickets to Heat 1 of the GT, why not come down to Crewe and play in the PSU event?
And get beaten by Dave's Big War Army. I mean, that sounds... Well,
is there another Dave coming?
I think these... Because we've been to some of these now. There's a mixture of people there. There's people there that have got a lot of experience with tournaments and take very good lists. And there are people there who go to play some fun games. So if you're a tournament player, there's something in it for you. If you're a casual player, don't be put off by the fact that it is a tournament, because it's still great fun and you'll have good games because you get matched against equal sort of the ranking system places you against similar level opponents. So you never feel like you're getting stomped by mental lists.
If you're a fan of this podcast, then you'll know full well that the last 2-day Purple Sparkle Unicorn event, I came last and went home with a wooden spoon. Did I have a bad weekend, though? No, I did not. It was such a fun event. I loved it. I can't wait for the next 2-day event. I definitely won't be coming bottom this time, though. I'm making a promise to myself. But it's still so much fun. Everybody's dead nice.
Some gorgeous armies as well last year.
Yeah, there was
a painting competition, a painting award bit, wasn't there? So many armies on the top bench that you could go and vote.
And that's returning again in January, isn't it?
Most importantly, there was food provided. Is this also the case?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, it was still food. And we've also added a few more events, awards to it. So last year we did spot prizes in each round. So if you rolled like a double six for your charge, or charge your Ghoul King into a Leviathan and it didn't die, you know, things like that. You got dice. So this new event coming up, we've got 3 new awards. 1 for killing the most kill points over the weekend. Another 1 for completing the most hidden agendas. And funnily enough, because I've mentioned it, the 1 that gets the most spot prizes.
Yeah. Cool.
You need to bring a Vorgraph for that kill point one.
Wow. Yeah.
That's yours.
Maybe I should. Awesome. So next week we've got another top 3 for you all as well. So Christmas is coming and we've done stocking fillers before, but this time I want to know top 3 presents for Warhammer fans.
Top 3 presents for Warhammer fans. Okay. Cool. Yeah, that sounds really good. If you want to get your choices in early, you can do so. Go on to Twitter, at Sprues and Brews. Head on to facebook.com/Sprues and Brews, or you can comment on the website. Also, if you've got any feedback about the show, let us know. And if you are listening via Apple Podcasts, please do give us a rate and a review on there.
You know what? If you're listening on Spotify, give a review on there as well.
Can you give reviews on Spotify?
You can give reviews on Spotify.
Yeah, stick a review on there as well. We will be popping in the podcast notes details and links to obtain a ticket for the Unicorn event. Be quick, though. There's only 2 left.
Yeah, only 2. When we did them last year and it sold 26, we were more than happy. And this year, we were like, are we going to get 25, 26? And last week or so, we've sold about 8 or 9 tickets.
Onwards and upwards.
Yeah. So we hope you've enjoyed this podcast. We'll be back again next week. We'll speak to you all soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruesandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter @spruesandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews.